drive through cities like Detroit, Pontiac, Flint, and there it is in the most expected and unexpected places, graffiti. And there's the constant question, graffiti, is it blight and a nuisance, or is it art? Does it signal signs of culture and revival, or is it that black and white? Nancy Derringer explored these questions in a recent article for Bridge Magazine. Welcome, Nancy.
Great to be here, Cindy.
It seems there probably is not a lot of middle ground over the graffiti discussion. I mean, I'm guessing that people either think it's a very cool expression of art, or they're appalled at what they see as a sign of decay.
I think that's very accurate. In fact, when I was writing this story, I found myself stopping periodically, trying to search for the right verb to describe who these folks even are, because I think some of them are undeniably artists. Some of them are undeniably vandals, and some of them kind of fall in between. So it's tough to find a middle ground or even a neutral verb for them.
And then when you have these post-industrial, when you get these post-industrial urban areas like we see in Detroit or in Flint, that has got to be sheer heaven if you want to do graffiti or, as you say, vandal. It could be artist or it could be vandal, depending on your point of view. But what a canvas for them.
Well, sure. And we have this, you know, we have thousands of buildings that have been either abandoned or shuttered or otherwise are not in use anymore and are falling into disrepair. When you talk to people who are kind of graffiti boosters or, you know, street art, which is what they call it, you know, they point out, how is what I am doing to this building worse than what the owner did to this building by walking away from it and leaving it to fall into disrepair? To them, this is an invitation, and they're taking it. It's a real kind of push-me-pull-you thing. It's a, well, this was part of my city, and you walked away from it, and now I'm going to claim it.
Now, you actually found there are different categories of graffiti. Can you kind of go into that for us and enlighten us?
Well, there's people who do... probably at the top end of the scale, you would see people who are good artists, who are technically skilled and can do these large, you know, pieces, they call them, these mural type pieces, like you might see in Detroit's Eastern Market or on the DeQuinder Cut, which is a recreation trail that runs through downtown.
Yes.
And the DeQuinder Cut was actually a renegade graffiti spot for many years before the railroad tracks were taken up and it was turned into this recreation trail. And so the decision was made to leave a lot of those pieces intact. And so you have that at kind of one end. And then at the other end, you would probably have the guy who goes around with a Sharpie or a single can of black spray paint and just paints his name on everything. You know, you might call those people taggers. And in between, you have kind of everybody else. And, you know, it's interesting because the standard thing for graffiti artists, vandals, whatever you want to call them, to do is their name, you know, their tag, their street name, whatever they call themselves. Mm-hmm. And I was talking to a guy who knows quite a lot about this, and he pointed out a tag that was right outside of his office window, and he goes, that's what we call Detroit style. And I said, well, what's Detroit style? And he said, well, it's very elaborate. There are multiple colors in it. Somebody took a lot of time to do this. And that's something that you can get away with in a city like Detroit, where the, you know, the police just don't have time to chase down kids who are,
true,
you know, who are doing this kind of thing. Everywhere else they would, you know, they're worried about what they call beating the buff, which is getting something down before the eradication teams come along and get rid of it.
Okay. I'm speaking with writer Nancy Derringer, talking graffiti. She looked into the graffiti issue in a recent edition of Bridge Magazine, and basically the question comes down, is this a blight and a nuisance, or is it really art and signs of culture and revival? And I'm interested, Nancy, if you're looking for people who regard graffiti as legit street art, who are these supporters? Is there anyone outside of the artists themselves?
Well, yeah, if you come to Detroit, there's a man named Derek Weaver who is promoting something that he's calling the Grand River Creative Corridor, which is a section of Grand River, I think it's between Warren and Rosa Parks, that they're trying to revitalize. And he has specifically invited some of the better known Detroit graffiti artists to come in and put up, you know, large scale murals, not just tags, not just your name or whatever, but I mean big, elaborate street art pieces. And, you know, to him, he said this is a signifier to a certain type of urban individual that we're trying to attract to Detroit, you know, young, I don't want to say hipster, that's such a cliche, but, you know, generally younger people who are looking for an urban experience that is not from the suburb that they were born and grew up in. And so to them, you know, a really nice piece of street art, you know, kind of tells them, hey, kid, you're not living in Grosse Pointe anymore. Whereas, but undeniably, if you drive through areas of like, you know, the Midtown area, what we used to call the Cass Corridor, there's an awful lot of just grungy vandalism around there too. And I don't know if people like that or not. It's not my cup of tea, but there you go.
You spoke to a really interesting person for this story who's a Flint lawyer who's also a graffiti writer. Tell us more about him, because he's a real bridge between the street life and the establishment.
He really is. His name is Charles Boyke. He's, I believe, 30, and he was a teenage graffiti thug. Or I shouldn't say thug. He was a vandal, you know, and he admits it. He was a... His mother was an artist, and he had some artistic talent, and he said his story is the same as everybody's who does this. Some friend of his took him to an underpass with some paint, and they got they started tagging. And he did this for a while, and eventually he got arrested, and I think he was put on some sort of probation. He moved to Chicago, he enrolled in art school, and then he enrolled in law school, and now he is a lawyer who still can paint. And he has started a festival called Aerosol and Audio, which is kind of music and graffiti in Flint in the summer. And what they do is they erect like a whole long line of like 4x8 sheets of plywood. And anybody can come in and paint wherever they want. And he really is the bridge. I mean, he talks about what they call permissible walls, which is a strategy that some cities are trying where they're saying, okay, if you guys just can't stop yourselves, then at least do it here. and of course, you know, there's something in the ethos of graffiti that says, hey, if it's permissible, it's not graffiti.
it's not edgy illegal. Enough. In fact, speaking of illegal, I don't know if it's a matter of being illegal or not, but certainly Flint Mayor Dane Walling, you got the sense, is truly not a fan. What was his quote? All the graffiti in Flint is being treated as a blight problem. How do they keep ahead of the graffiti blights. Writers?
Well, he said, you know, they've got some strategy. He said, the one thing about graffiti is what makes a piece valuable is the more eyes that see it in the course of a day, the better. And so, you know, I guess probably the ultimate graffiti would be like on a high rise building that like thousands of people pass under and have to look at. But I think that's what's behind some of the overpass sign tagging. But you know, what they do in Flint is, he said, they've taken some, you know, traditional hot spots and turn those over to community groups to do murals. And he said, generally speaking, the taggers will respect a mural, you know, another artist's work more than they would, say, a, you know, bridge abutment. That's one thing they do. But otherwise, you know, they have a volunteer squad, and, you know, they just go out there with their white paint and they paint over it. So, I mean, it's kind of the ultimate Sisyphean task, if I can use a little grad student word there. But, I mean, you know, you do it and then you have to do it again and you have to do it again. But that to them is the way they choose to deal with it. It's kind of like the broken window theory of crime prevention. You know, if you let it take hold, it tends to blight the whole area. So we always police it.
Do you get the sense that this too shall pass? Is this a fad, or do you think graffiti on city walls and overhead freeway signs is really here to stay?
I think it's here to stay. It's been around an awful long time. I think of it, there are two metaphors that work for me when you think of graffiti. One is tattoos and the other is hip hop. You know, when I was a kid, the only people who got tattoos were sailors and disreputable people who ran, you know, carnival rides or whatever at the state fair. You know, it was a signifier that you were a rebel. And now, you know, your granddaughter probably has a tattoo somewhere and she doesn't care what her grandmother thinks about it. You know, the other is hip hop. I mean, hip hop was an art form that kind of came up from the streets. You know, when it first started to be heard on a widespread basis, you had people saying, that's not music, that's noise. Those guys can't play instruments. Who are, you know, what is this? And now, you know, it's everywhere. It's used in advertising and it's become a respected art form. I mean, these kids who are slinging spray cans on the corner may not have gone to art school, But, you know, if little by little, if they work at it, they can kind of get good at it. And now you see graffiti. I mean, as Charles Boyke pointed out, he said, every time I see graffiti style lettering in an advertisement, you know, I think, well, we won. So there you go.
Writer Nancy Derringer explored graffiti in a recent edition of Bridge Magazine. Thanks so much, Nancy. Always good to talk with you.
Always great to be here, Cindy. Thanks.
So what do you think? Well, we are already hearing from you on Facebook. John Thompson writes, beauty is in the eye of the beholder, and that can be said of ugly, too. Gabriel Field says, art is for the masses, power to the people. Let us know what you think. You can find us on Facebook or on Twitter. Of course, we're at Stateside Radio.